BABU is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society April Concert. On Friday, April 20th, the award-winning original roots music group Kathy Boyd and Phoenix Rising will be coming to the Portland Folk Music Society concert stage at 2901 Southeast Steel Street. Doors at 7, concert starts at 7:30. Global Music Awards winner in the categories of lyrics, songwriters, and album for the newest release, 40 Years of Lonesome. Once again, that's Kathy Boyd and Phoenix Rising, Friday, April 20th, Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steel Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's time now for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, this week, broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm a public school teacher and host every second Monday of the month, where I typically interview teachers and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Joining us today on the phone is Matt Miller. Matt, hello.
Hey, how are you, Stephen?
Hey, it's great to have you on. So excited to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, Matt, I always like to hear a little bit about teachers' background and experience before we sort of launch into whatever the specific topic is. So tell us a little bit about your teaching background.
Sure. I became an emergency certified teacher back in 2015. I actually was certified a week before school started.
Wow.
With little experience in the classroom. I graduated from the University of Oklahoma in 2012 with a political science and international relations degree.
Okay.
Thinking that I would get in that field, and I ended up being a teacher. I currently teach world history, and I'm the head girls soccer coach here at Charles Page High School in Sand Springs, Oklahoma, just outside of Tulsa.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for that. I know in Oregon, sometimes we're a little geographically challenged when it comes to some of the other states. So it sounds like this opportunity, you it's sort of, what happened? What inspired you to do this? You said you went and got this emergency certification to start. What inspired that?
So I'm born and raised and educated in the state of Oklahoma. When I graduated from the University of Oklahoma, I actually got into the aviation industry and was a GM of an aviation company. This kind of ties in what inspired me about this is that my family, I have one aunt, a brother, mother, stepfather, who all come from an education background.
Gotcha. Okay.
When hearing their stories and seeing their dedication, I felt to myself that, you know, this is a job that reaps fulfillment in a much greater sense than I think most other jobs, most certainly the one that I was currently at.
Mm-hmm.
To have an impact, whether you know it or not, on a child, to me is very important, and so that is a very important position. Which, you know, their story, their dedication, is really what inspired me to become a teacher. I took a 60% pay decrease to become a teacher because it was so inspirational. You know, around holidays, hearing my family, you know, talk about their experience as an educator.
Right. Okay. And you said 60%?
Yes.
Oh my.
Yes.
So, well, let's hear a little bit more about your teaching. So now you've been doing this is now your fourth year?
Correct.
And what are you enjoying about it most?
Really the things that inspired me in the first place to become a teacher. As a teacher, you have the opportunity, that ability to be the change and inspiration to a young mind to help build a better society. What greater joy is there? That's what I feel, that's what I get the most out of being an educator, being a teacher is that opportunity alone.
Yes. Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about what it's like to be teaching in Oklahoma. I mean, we've been hearing some stories. We've heard about teachers leaving, going to Texas or other states where they get paid better. We've heard about teachers mowing lawns and waiting tables. I understand that your brother, who initially was going to come on the show, had to take a shift, or ended up taking a shift, so he couldn't come on. And I know he mentioned that you also work another job in addition to teaching and coaching. So tell us a little bit about what it's like to teach in Oklahoma. What are the hardships there?
I'm going to be brutally honest. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. My class size is not conducive. My resources are limited or non-existent. My administration is not progressive or supportive a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. The overall environment is frustrating, to say the least. I have a second job on top of an extra duty stipend, and that's coaching soccer. For example, today I was at my second job at 4 o'clock in the morning. I mm-hmm. leave that at about 6:30 to 7. I have, an hour, maybe an hour and a half on some days to shower and get ready for, my main source of income, and that's teaching.
Yep.
And then after school, I've got either soccer practice and or soccer games that, depending on if it's away or not, I'm not done until, anywhere from 9 to 11 o'clock in the evening to wake up at 3 to make it to my second job the next day at 4 in the morning.
Wow.
So days, are long. The situation in Oklahoma that, with the state legislature, hasn't passed a salary increase for teachers in the past 10 years. And Oklahoma, school funding per student has also plummeted by 28% percent since 2008, more than any other state. And a lot of that ties into, again, what I said, my class size. I find myself having a class of anywhere from 35 to 37 students.
Yeah.
First day of school, I don't even have enough desks, not to mention books and technology and other resources. The resources that I do, again, are limited. Books that have no covers. I have to borrow Chromebooks from other teachers. My smart board doesn't even work. It's really just a projector.
Okay.
A lot of these things are very frustrating, and frustrating, I would, easily say it is the current state of teaching.
Yeah. And it's kind of a double whammy, so to speak. You yourself, or teachers, I should say, are not paid a living wage, but then on top of that all, you're really struggling in school just to be able to teach effectively given the lack of resources.
Correct. And what's even more heartbreaking is the students not having that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, for those listeners who maybe haven't been following closely what's been happening, lay out you sort of have laid out what's been happening leading up to the strike. You've talked some about the 28% drop in per student funding. Do you want to add anything more as far as taxes,
yeah,
budgets, that kind of thing, and how that led to the current situation?
Sure. So, yeah, again, the school funding per student, has dropped 28% since 2008. It's more than any other state. Here in the state of Oklahoma, we spend, per prisoner, roughly around $16,000 versus roughly $8,000 per student.
So twice as much.
Yes. Since 2008, public school enrollment has increased by 40,000. Again, while the state funding has fallen $213 million, and that kind of goes into the class size that I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma loses almost 400 teachers per month. And a lot of the tax situation, I feel, is a large part into this situation in this equation. Oklahoma taxes oil and gas at a rate, far below other oil and natural gas producing states.
Mm-hmm.
Even states that aren't oil and natural gas producing. The GPT, or the gross product tax, for oil and gas here in Oklahoma is only 3.2% versus roughly around 12% in the neighboring state of Arkansas, which is not an oil and gas producing state.
Gotcha.
So it's well obvious and blatant, hence the frustrating situation that we're finding ourselves in at the moment.
Yeah. Did you follow what was going on in West Virginia?
A little bit, not as much as I would have liked. Again, long hours for me.
Sure.
Here lately.
Yeah, I just wonder if teachers in Oklahoma talked about what was happening in West Virginia, if that had an impact at all on inspiring them, or maybe giving them a little more courage to go for it here.
Oh, sure. Yeah, in that sense, absolutely. Each state is different, and the issues at hand are different, but West Virginia being an inspiration for us here in Oklahoma, absolutely.
Yeah. When you talk about taxes and revenue for the state, how is that playing out as far as are people really getting on board as far as, hey, the only way we're going to fix this is if we raise taxes? Because sometimes that can be a losing battle, right? Especially when some of these big businesses and corporations put their money into advertising and things, they can really turn that kind of thing around and make it seem like, every family is going to have their taxes raised. So how's that been playing out?
You're absolutely correct, and it's, we're starting to come around and see the writing on the wall and the issues at hand. I feel politically behind many years compared to other states, and we're just now seeing the writing on the wall and really where this puts us in comparison with the rest of the United States.
Yeah.
And we're getting frustrated. We're just now starting to get frustrated. The legislatures have really gotten away with quite a bit in regards to, taxing the oil and natural gas. We're starting to say, hey, this cannot be good. We've got to start doing something about this and more progressive. We've got to diversify our economy and start holding larger companies more accountable in regards to taxes. We're identifying the issues. We're starting to get frustrated, which is the first step to anything in this regard. So that's kind of where we're at, and getting the legislatures to wake up as well is something that we're dealing with, and it's going to take time. It's going to take longer time than I think other states, with it being Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where we're at right now.
So I want you to think back, and I don't know how far back it went for you, but how and when did you first hear about the idea of a statewide walkout or strike? Do you usually call it a walkout or a strike? What are you calling it?
It's been called both.
Yeah.
I'm I'm calling it a strike, but I think the initial term was a walkout.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to the situation, we talked amongst ourselves, us educators, with mutual frustration, and that's really been building for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
But we put it on the radar finally. The Oklahoma Education Association, or OEA, would eventually catch wind of it, get on board, and later email members, you know, this is how we're going to go about doing it. We've heard your frustrations. We, you know, the time is now to act. So they were the first, you know, to publicly acknowledge it and make a set of demands, along with a set of policies to go along, you know, to make those demands happen. Soon, you know, of course, social media would take place and follow that. Social media pages such as Oklahoma Teacher Walkout,
mm-hmm.
is a really good one. I think it, in a matter of overnight, increased its followers, I think, like 50,000.
That Alberto, he's a pretty popular guy now.
He is very popular, and he's you know, to the point. He's professional, respectful, and you know, also at the end of the day, fed up just like all of us, and, mm-hmm. and to the point. We're lucky to have him fighting for our cause, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. I've got Matt Miller from Oklahoma. Matt, what have you been doing this last just over a week now? How have you been involved? What have your days been like since the strike started?
Well, unfortunately, I've only been to the Capitol once.
Mm-hmm.
And a large part of that is because, again, I'm a soccer coach in mm-hmm. the middle of our soccer season, and the ridiculous fact that athletics is continuing despite no school being held.
Mm.
So the kids have been out of class, yet I'm still holding practices and going to games and training and all that.
Okay.
As a school, never really, you know, stopped existing. I'm still baffled that we're still doing athletics. So unfortunately, I've only been to the Capitol once.
What was that like?
It was inspirational. It was something that I've never seen. It was something that I have never been a part of, and it was really amazing seeing us all on the same page and organized.
Yeah.
Something that I don't feel has been very strong with educators in this state for many, many, many years. So it was really eye-opening. And I wish I could, you know, take part more at the Capitol than what I am, but, you know, soccer at the moment is consuming me along with my second job.
Right.
So I haven't been able to attend the rallies like I would like to.
Are there other things that people can do then that aren't able to make it to the Capitol?
Absolutely. I participate through social media. I've even donated food to teachers that are on the corner protesting.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I took my girls' soccer team. We all got Subway and we handed out Subway to the teachers that were on the corner protesting that did not go to the Capitol. So there's definitely different avenues, and I highly suggest that you know, teachers that can't make it to the Capitol, like myself, as much as they would like to, view those as possibilities and great alternative avenues.
Let's talk for just a minute about the demands of this strike. A lot of attention gets paid to teacher pay, teacher salary, but there are additional demands, right? Increasing taxes on the state's oil and gas industry, like you mentioned, so that schools can do things like provide new textbooks, or so that you can bring your class sizes down to a more reasonable, manageable number of students. What do you think of the demands as they were laid out? Do you feel like, are you asking for too much? Do you wish that you had demanded more?
So the demand is give teachers a $10,000 pay increase, around $200 million in funding for education, and an additional $5,000 raise for support staff. I feel this is awfully nice and not asking too much.
Mm-hmm.
These demands are not only, you know, they don't only get us caught up, but unfortunately, these are demands that the state legislature has failed to do or address for decades. These demands still put us behind and not competitive with surrounding states. So these demands are really only a starting point, it's still not enough. We're just the initial steps. So,
yeah.
You know, baby steps is the way that I see it. But I think that the demands that OEA and the teachers are really fighting for are respectable. I don't feel that it's not too much. With the current state the way it is, you know, anything is better than what we're getting right now.
Yep.
So I can't say it's too low.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it's awfully nice and not asking too much.
Okay.
To be competitive with our surrounding states, to fund our child in their education process. I just don't. That's I think not too much to ask for.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's move on to what you have heard from maybe any of your students. It sounds like you're seeing them during soccer. Some of them. What are you hearing from students or maybe any of their families about what's been happening?
I have been just doing sporadic discussion in class about this leading up before the mm-hmm. walkout, trying to get a sense of the environment. Where are the kids coming from in all this? And, you know, at first, they were really opposed to it and really not on board. And as we looked into it a little bit more intensively, they started to see some issues and their parents as well. So initially they weren't on board as much as I would have liked,
mm-hmm.
but also at the same time with it, you know, being in Oklahoma, I'm also not surprised.
Yeah.
So at the beginning there was a little bit of mixed feelings. Of course you have the kids who say, heck yes, you know, we're not gonna have school, we're out. But then you also have the kids that, you know, are very upset
mm-hmm.
and are, you know, right beside the teachers on the corner or at the Capitol that are very involved in the future of their education, which is phenomenal.
Yeah. Have your feelings about your union changed at all? I was reading somewhere that 2/3 of educators in Oklahoma are not unionized. It sounds like I think you said that you were part of OEA, Oklahoma Education Association. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So what's has anything changed for you in terms of how you feel about your union?
I've never had comfortable feelings with our union to begin with all honesty, and
mm-hmm.
and this is quite simply because our union is weak
mm-hmm.
and has failed to negotiate and bargain higher wages and education funding for almost, you know, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
To me personally, there's not enough fire in the organization. Hopefully this has brought that to that organization. I'm part of it. I pay dues to it. But I feel that you know, let's look at their track record. I'd like to see more out of them. And I think going forward we will, especially when we, you know, hold them accountable and we push them as well. We're just as important as the organization itself.
Amen, brother. I hear you on that one. Hey, what are you hoping will happen in the next few days?
Well, I mean, of course, I'd like to see our demands met. However, I OEA is already, I think, compromised and has settled on a teacher raise of about $6,000 versus the $10,000 that we're asking.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm holding out that we at least get the education funding to hopefully provide a better working environment.
Yeah.
If we're not going to get, you know, the $10,000 that we originally asked, lower enrollment, or I think smaller class sizes, more resources and support from administration, especially our superintendents, would create a better working environment that, you know, would compensate a little bit. Because that me personally, Geisel, is a lot of the issue too. It's the lack of funding and education that's created an environment that's just not conducive to you know, the students and education itself. So,
right.
You know, I'm hoping to see, you know, we get some more funding that will hopefully provide a better working environment, you know, not only for educators, but the students more importantly. You know, as far as long-term for the years to come, you know, we must change politically in our legislature. We have around 40 conservative seats running unopposed. So I would like to say, you know, I would like to see greater political involvement, of course, in addition to the progress of education. I'd like to see our students and teachers successful in every avenue. So that's kind of what my fingers are crossed for. That's kind of where I'm, you know, hoping that Oklahoma goes.
Yeah. Well, we are rapidly running out of time. We've just got a couple more minutes. I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about what lessons do you think educators in other states could learn from this experience? If you have any advice for educators, maybe here in Oregon, before we launch a statewide strike.
I think no matter what, and despite how red or conservative your state may be, change can indeed happen within, and collective bargaining does indeed work. Of course, for Oregon's case, I predict organization and the political environment will be a little bit better. And with that, I would give the advice of, you know, staying strong and unified. Keep clear and open lines of communication among yourselves, your opponents, and even educators outside of the state willing to help.
Yeah.
In addition to, you know, take to social media. It has worked, and it's worked in many social movements around the world. So take the social media and use it as a tool, and most importantly, keep persistent and relevant.
Absolutely. You know, it's been that's one of the things that I think has been surprising to a lot of folks, including myself, is that these current uprisings have been in what are referred to as red states, right? Pretty deeply Republican states, although West Virginia, arguably, you know, they have a Democratic base as well. But I wonder, when you're talking with your fellow educators, you're talking with teachers from, you know, that have voted in both parties, that maybe have some different political views, and yet they've come together for this. What's that been like?
It's been amazing. I'm honestly a little surprised. I'm glad that, you know, we've put that on the back burner, and we've put our kids first in the situation.
Yeah.
And not big business and not you know, what's the best interest of the legislature. It's what's the best interest of our children in the state, and I'm, you know, amazed and grateful, you know, for the awakening, not just, you know, for myself, but the rest of the state. the parents.
Yes. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO. It's been great to have you on. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and tell folks what's been happening. I wish you the best, and we'll be following what happens there.
Alrighty, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I also want to quickly thank our engineer, Mike. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Steven Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month, we'll screen the film The Real Dirt on Farmer John on Thursday, April 12th at 7 p.m. The Real Dirt on Farmer John is a documentary about a maverick Midwestern farmer amidst a failing economy and heralds a resurrection of farming in America. Filmmaker Taggart Siegel will be in attendance, and there will be a Q&A after the film. More information can be found at kboo.fm